Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
On the couch. Welcome, everybody, as you always are every week. This time, well, it's 11 a.m. here at Pacific Standard Time in beautiful downtown Los Angeles. But all over the world, I welcome you to my couch to think about some of the issues in your life, maybe give you some suggestions about how to deal with certain things going on, and give you some self-esteem, too. Make you feel better about who you are, what you're doing, and all that stuff. So welcome to the show. We've got a lot of subjects going on because what I'm doing today is answering listeners' questions. A lot of emails come in, and what I do is I try to sort of pick through them and see which ones apply to most people out there, which ones are most generally. And I try to get to everybody when I'm doing this Answer Your Emails show. When I don't have a special guest on, because I think, to some extent, it connects me with you guys. And I want you to know that I'm not your therapist and we don't have a therapeutic relationship. But what the deal is that, I try to give you suggestions. And these are based on my personal experiences, doing therapy for over 15 years, living life for a while, and also with research. I do a lot of, reading about research and studies and what makes things better and healthier and, mentally healthier for people. What makes us happy? The science of happiness. That's a biggie. So today what we're going to be talking about are a lot of different subjects, and I'm answering your questions in regards to how to talk to your partner about sex. I hear this a lot in sessions with people I see and have for years. How do I talk with my partner about sex? What I'd like, what I need, what they're not doing, what turns me off, what turns me on, okay? So we're going to be talking about that today. And also, we have questions from a listener about narcissists. She wants to know if she's dating a narcissist and what that really means. So I can give you a psychological breakdown of that. I will give you the DSM version of it, actually. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorder, Clinical Diagnoses for What a Narcissist Is. All right. I'm going to give you also the 7 biggest myths about love and relationships, in my opinion. The stuff I hear that's hogwash. Basically, myths, stuff that's not true. So if you're like embracing some of these belief systems, I'm going to just break them apart. I'm going to get you to think about other things that might be more realistic and more actually positive. These myths are kind of downers, they got a negative. So I'm going to break some of those myths up a little bit. We're going to explore those. And also, to name a few, we're going to check out what makes you so needy? I have a listener who wrote me, and she says she fears that she may be too needy. Her friends tell her she's needy, and that's not good because you're going to attract the people who treat you badly. In my opinion, that's what happens a lot. So anyway, guys, if you want to email me here on the couch, check it out, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com comes right through here to our beautiful Los Angeles studios, LA Talk Radio, comes right here. And if you have questions or comments or anything, you can share. I'm open. I'm down. I want to hear from you. Or you can call me live. I think I'm going to really be focusing on emails. But if you have a call, you have a question about something, you want to particularly ask me, you can do so. 323 is the area code, Los Angeles. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. So here we go. Let's get started. I just want to clear up something first, because this is a question that I hear from a lot of people. And I don't know, is it Los Angeles? Is it Hollywood? Is that why? I hear this all the time from people, because we're in, you know, the entertainment capital of the world. Is that why I'm hearing these things? All the time I hear this. Now, this question comes from Angela. And she said, I have been seeing a man for about 6 months. A lot of my friends have started avoiding hanging out with us. When we try and go out with other couples, it seems like they're always making excuses now. We used to hang out when I first started dating him, but that's kind of stopped. Well, my best friend says that she and her husband can't stand my boyfriend, who I'll call Dan, because they think he's a narcissist. So can you give me a psychological definition of what that means? Sometimes I feel like our relationship is all about him, but I'm an easygoing person, and I don't mind someone who is more outgoing. Well, there's a difference between outgoing, Angela, and narcissism. Because, I mean, there are some real markers here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the breakdown, the diagnostic criteria for narcissistic personality disorder, as they call it. We call it an axis 2, cluster B, in our DSM. And that means that you've got to be kind of careful, get your red flags up for these certain characteristics. Because it's really tough to be with a narcissist, because everything is always about them. And if you're a shyer person, as you said you are, Angela, or easygoing, in your words, they can kind of bowl you over. And it gets kind of tiring all the time, because you kind of want to hold your hand up in the air and go, hello, can I ask a question? Well, you're talking all about yourself. Can I just say, can I order a drink? Hello? Okay. So, and also, by the way, Angela, your friends are pulling back because they're tired of him hogging the conversation about himself always. That's probably what the deal is. So here you go. The clinical diagnoses for the narcissistic personality disorder. And I just want you to have these little check boxes. All right, so listen to me, Angela. Here we go. It's defined as a pervasive pattern of grandiosity in fantasy or real behavior, the need for admiration, and lack of empathy. That's the biggie. Lack of empathy. A lot of times there's not a conscience. But the biggie here is a lack of empathy for others. It kind of begins in early adulthood. You kind of see that narcissistic personality begin to rear its ugly head. You know, that's why we diagnose this around the age of 18. And it's present in a variety of contexts. So here are some of the criteria. So I want you to think, Angela, about your guy you're dating and see if you can check any of these boxes. All right. Does Dan, or whoever, or the name you gave him, does he exaggerate his achievements and talents? Does he expect to be recognized as superior? Does he have a grandiose sense of self-importance? Is he preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love? By the way, women can be narcissistic too. This is not just a guy thing, Angela. More men tend to be narcissists than women. But it's just, you know, kind of keep checking the boxes here. Ready? Here we go. Does he believe that he is special and unique and can only be understood by or associate with other people or high status people? Does he require excessive admiration? And you can see that, you know, Angela, when he's talking about himself ad nauseum for so long when you're out in public with him and your friends. Which it doesn't sound like it's happening anymore. So when you're out in public with him alone, He requires excessive admiration. Does he have a sense of entitlement? In other words, does he have unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment or automatic compliance with his expectations? Does he want people to jump to it? Come on, hear what I'm saying. And that's that kind of weird social thing about not realizing how they're affecting other people when they're out in public, especially your friends, maybe, Angela. Because he's going on and on about himself and his thing. And, you know, the old joke about the narcissist is, enough about me. I've talked so much about me. Come on. This is it. What do you think about me? Yeah, that's the old joke. So, and it's real, by the way. I really have heard this.
Oh, my
gosh. So, right. There's another one, too. And I want you to note this in your little checkbox of possible symptoms, Angela. Is he interpersonally explorative? Interpersonally explorative. What does that mean? Well, that means, does he take advantage of other people to achieve his or her own ends? You know? That's the way it goes. Does he lack empathy? And is he unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others? You know, that's such a huge thing when we can, you know, feel for other people because, you know, we just care for other people and they're telling us about their hardships or their suffering and what they're going through. Or they're just trying to express their feelings. And we're just not there. We're not present. We're, eh? Yeah. So, that's really important. Another characteristic that I've seen that rears its ugly head with a narcissist is envy. You know, they have a lot of jealousy or envy. And also, what's really curious is that they think that others are jealous or envious of them.
I know she's jealous of me.
I know he's jealous of me because I'm better looking. And I'm more successful. I know he must be. You know, all the people at work are jealous of me. Well, Angela, have you heard that from him before? Yeah. And also, is he kind of arrogant? You know, does he have arrogance? I mean, all those things kind of fit together. But what I want you to do is I want you to listen to the show again. It'll be up in the archives when we get off the air. And tomorrow, you know, I'll be able to fill in all the stuff there. My engineer will put in all of the content to the show. And then you can listen again to what I said if you didn't have a chance to check the boxes quickly. So take note, if you, someone out there, are dating a person who appears narcissistic, I just gave you the diagnostic criteria, things to look out for. And those are like 9 things. So according to the DSM, if you meet 5 or more of those 9, you got yourself an access to cluster B. Okay? And it's nothing to make fun of. Believe me, I'm not making fun of it. It's certainly a disorder. But you know, what's so tough about this is that, you know, with people who have serious clinical mental disorders, you know, we tend to feel really sorry for them because it's very tough. They can't control the chemical imbalance going on. It's very sad. It's like any kind of disorder, a disability. But when you have someone sometimes with narcissistic personality, it's just, you know, you want to feel sorry for them, but you just get so mad because it's always all about them. And you just kind of feel like you're not loved or left out in the background. So that it's not really that you're not loved because it's just their inability to have empathy. And so it's kind of sad. But that I just wanted to share that with you guys. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you're on the couch live with me in Los Angeles right now. As you always are, Fridays, 11 in the morning Pacific time. And what I'm doing is I'm answering listeners' questions, stuff that you wrote me, questions you have for me about issues or you know, relationship stuff. I always like to help you with your relationship issues. I've been doing this for so many years. And, you know, a lot of the stuff does come back, and I want to reiterate some of the, you know, very similar issues that we all go through. Okay? It's nothing that is very different or unique. And I'm not making light of what your issues are. Gosh, no, no. I'm just saying that we all experience pain. We all have problems in relationships. We all have issues. We all make mistakes and all that stuff. So there's no judgment or criticism here. It's just trying to make you healthy and feel better. Yeah. So on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, I'm answering your questions. And we don't have a therapy relationship, by the way, guys. I'm just giving you suggestions based on research, based on years of working with people. So, all right, we're going to move along now. I received another really interesting email from Kelly. And I work with a lot of people who are dating. Just kind of getting out there in the world, just starting to kind of date again, either after a divorce or a breakup or a bad relationship or, you know, so it's kind of difficult sometimes to put it out there and try to meet new people and things. So Kelly writes, how can I tell if a guy who I'm dating just wants to have sex with me? She says, it seems like I have a lot of bad luck, and I always pick guys who just want to hit it and quit it. I'm tired of meeting these men, so how can I spot them? That's a great question. And I do hear this as well. Because, and not all guys are like this, by the way. You know? I mean, really, that's one of the myths I'm going to debunk coming up later in the show about relationships and love, about men and women. But so here's some ideas to just sort of heads up for you, Kelly. How to tell if a guy's just kind of looking to have sex with you or whatever, get you in the sack or however you want to say it. There are a lot of guys out there who may appear to be interested in you. And how can you tell the difference between the guys who really want to get to know you from the crafty ones who just want to get you into bed? Well, just some ideas here. Take note. Check the boxes. Ask yourself, does he ask any questions about you? This is, you know, again, Kelly wants to know. She's just started dating. She wants to spot guys who are interested in her as a person, not just want to get her in bed. So you just have to ask yourself, does he ask questions about you to get to know you, meaningful questions, other than like, what's the wildest thing you've ever done in bed? Or things like that. Unimportant, shallow questions. Okay. A red flag. And of course, this is a no-brainer, but if he's all over you, just too soon. Come on. That's it. If you're out a lot and he makes sure the drinks keep coming or keeps pouring that drink, yeah, kind of wants to loosen you up a little bit. Okay, now this is something I hear. The guys who call or text at the last minute, hey, what's up? What are you doing? Booty call. Also, if he tries to get you over to his place as soon as possible. Hey, come on over. What's up? You want to hang out? Come on over to my place. You want to hang out? I'm in your neighborhood. Can I come up? And also, kind of take note of this, Kelly. Does he respect your no the first time you say it if he wants to have sex? If you have to say no and you're not into it, you want to get to know him more, and he just kind of keeps pushing and doesn't get it, it's like, eh, I don't think you want to be with this guy. This is a red flag right there. All right? Another biggie is he won't make an effort to travel out of his way to see you. Now, guys, if you're listening from another state or country, if you haven't lived in Los Angeles or been here visiting, you know that this is a vast city. I mean, the city of Los Angeles it constitutes hundreds of miles. So we live on the freeways. But come on. That's why they call them freeways. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crowded and all that. But if somebody really doesn't want to put the effort out to travel any kind of distance, and I'm not talking about another state. I mean, that would be cool. You guys can meet halfway if you really like each other. But come on. make an effort. If you're the one that's making an effort or making suggestions to meet somebody, guys and girls, you got to think about that. Also, a lot of times, guys who are just not into you or trying to really get to know you, except, you know, with sex, they don't kind of create original or special plans. We're all human beings who are kind of creative. I mean, you don't have to be fabulously interesting and create these wild and crazy dates or anything like that. But, you know, just like, hey, let's hang out at the local pub and talk about me or talk about how sexy you look. You know, it's nice to have someone who kind of makes special plans. That means they kind of care about making you have fun with them. Oh, another thing is when they look around the room or over your shoulder when they're talking. They're looking around. They're not into you. Well, they are, but they're checking out other people, too. And that's a guy thing sometimes. It's a girl thing, too. We all do that. But I'm just kind of giving you the signs, the little red flags to look for. And now if you isolate these, sometimes we do things that are not cool. But if you kind of put all these together, then you have to say in your mind, Kelly, ooh, I think this guy may be just trying to get me for sex. So also, again, and I really want to stress another one is if this person or these people you're seeing really don't make an attempt to have a meaningful conversation about, you know, being interested in your interests or your what do you feel or what do you, you know, and again, you don't have to get into deep and hairy, you know, discussions, psychological analyses the first several dates at all. I mean, I'm not talking about that. But if they're kind of shallow and they just don't want to get into anything that has to do with what is important to you, that's a red flag too. Now, a lot of people don't know how to talk deeply or how to express their feelings, so you've got to give people slack on that. A little heads up also, guys who are looking to get you in bed or have sex with you. This is for Kelly specifically. I'm not being sexist. I'm just saying. Many times these guys are cute and the most charming. And what happens is what's called the halo effect. So we want to believe them and we want to trust them. And sometimes we tell ourselves, you know, it's kind of fun and they're really cute. And, you know, why not? But so here's some, you know, just suggestions, little red flags that I suggest that you look at, Kelly. So you don't keep picking these guys that just want to, you know, have you as a booty call. All right. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. You're on the couch with me, as you always are. Here we are on LA Talk Radio once again. And I'm answering your questions that were really good on my email that comes straight here. It's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And I'm just giving suggestions today. So we're talking about a lot of different issues, specifically those that have to do with love and relationships. Some personal stuff, too. Also, I'm going to debunk 7 myths that we all think that have to do with love and relationships that I hear a lot. I'd like to tell you about those as well. And straighttalkdoc@gmail.com is the place where a lot of you guys wrote me these questions. And again, we don't have a therapeutic relationship. We're just giving advice here, suggestions based on research, you know, based on ideas and things like that. And a lot of experience I've had. Okay. Let's see here. Let me find the one that I wanted to do next. All right. Oh, this is a good one because it seems like I'm getting a lot of emails from girls. This is good. Oh, here's a good one. I wanted to talk about this. Aha. Because, here we go. She says, hey, doctor. And I don't know who. She says, Alex, looks like Alex. When we're communicating well in other areas, my boyfriend and I have a problem when it comes to talking about sex. I often feel we have very different expectations in this area. Sometimes the things he wants to do, comma, ready, which involve tying me up or being dominating, kind of freak me out. Sometimes they even hurt. He also likes to try to have sex in public places, where we may not be seen but could get caught. He gets off on this. Whew. We get along on just about everything except sex. I wish he wouldn't push some of this stuff on me. How can you help? All right, Alex, here we go. Here's how you talk to your partner about sex. I mean, I don't know if what you've told him. It's like, this makes me feel creepy that we're doing it in the furniture department of Macy's department store. And he wants to go into the elevator. I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, there's a lot of people that like that excitement or that, ooh, I could get caught in public. It's kind of weird, though, when you do. Not that I've ever done that or had that experience, but have known people who have been caught with their pants down, literally. Oh, my God. Yeah, not a good thing if that's, like, one of the only things that really charges you up. So let me tell you how to talk to your partner about what you would like, how to approach your partner in these situations, because you got to talk about these things, because you're going to start resenting this guy sooner or later. You know, it's just the way it is, Alex. You're going to start, this is going to be a chore for you. And the thing you don't want, ladies and men, but mostly ladies, is for sex to become a chore. Don't want that feeling, because it's got to be mutual. Not always mutual. You have to come to some kind of, you know, in the middle, some kind of agreement. But you know, you can do things that would charge him up. Maybe not in public. Might be kind of scary. But you've got to compromise, is what I'm saying, basically. So here's the thing. You have to talk to him about what you prefer, what you don't want. So here's some pointers. First of all, do not broach the subject in bed. Right before or after sex, when you're naked, is not the best time to examine the faults or talk about what you didn't like or what you did like. And plus, your bedroom, if you're in the bedroom, you say he likes to do it out in public. But that should be a sanctuary for you guys and not a place to air grievances. So choose a pleasant but neutral place. All right? Get a restaurant that's romantic. Get away from other tables, too. Yeah, al fresco somewhere. Yeah. Make a plan to talk with each other about it, okay? There's something to be said for spontaneity, but this may not be the time for it. So if you blindside your guy, Alex, right, if you just start talking about it, you're more likely to make him defensive. So you got to kind of give him an idea of what you want to talk about. Say, hey, I'd like to share some ideas I have with you about, you know, sex and what we're doing and things like that. Because it's a little, there's things you do that are a little uncomfortable that make me feel not sexy. And I'm willing to compromise on certain things, but we need to talk, okay? So you can come off like that. Just make a plan, you know. Something else which kind of helps if you're not into what he's doing is if you've had a relationship for a little while, you can kind of reflect on what was so cool about what attracted you guys in the first place. So you look back fondly on the good old days when both of you were really, really into each other. So you can say something like, remember when we used to spend hours just kissing? I really miss that. You know, I just loved it when you used to just grab me and hug me from behind. I love it when you just massage my back. Things like that. Tell him what you like fondly. Good stuff. Go to the positive. Because, again, you don't want him to interpret it as you're nagging or putting him down, that kind of thing. And one of the biggest things that I hear and I understand from both partners is that we don't automatically know how to please someone. We just don't. It's very common with a lot of people. So you have to sort of explain what you like. There's a really good book. It's by Todd Krieger, C-R-E-A-G-E-R. It's called The Long Hot Marriage. It's a really good book. And it's kind of like rolling with a lot of the changes that have happened throughout your life, or how to find new and exciting things to do without freaking you out or make you feel weird. You know what I'm saying? Also, when you're talking to your man, Alex, about your sexual preferences and what you like and see if he can compromise on those things. You've got to just be clear about what you want. You can't just be quiet and put up with this stuff because, again, what you're going to be doing is resenting him, you know? So if he just wants to jump into bed or whatever he does, wherever he wants to do it, and get right to it. But now it would feel more comfortable, like I just said, with making out longer or a massage or, you know what I'm saying, just taking your time. Just tell him what does feel good, what you would like these days. Be clear about what you want. Yeah, and don't berate or belittle him. You know, you don't have to be mean to get what you want. You know, you don't have to be cruel, you know. So you can say something like this. One of my favorites is the I statements. I love those because you're not, you are doing this and you are doing that. You're saying stuff like, I know you want me to feel good, and I know that it makes you happy when I'm excited, and I want you to enjoy sex too. So let's talk about how we can make it better. Is that cool with you? Okay, that's how you approach it. And I said the I statement's really important because you're not saying things like, you never give me enough foreplay. I mean, how common is that, right? You don't do this. So, yeah, I got to think about those things. And also, it isn't a one-time conversation, Alex. This is not a one-time conversation. See, the problem with many relationships is what we do is we think we express ourselves about certain issues, sex being one of them, and we have this deep one-time conversation. And then the ugly problem rears its head again, and then we go, but I talked about it. The thing is that you got to keep reiterating throughout time, not being a nag, not being, oh, you said that. No, saying, hey, I'd like to revisit our conversation because remember, we kind of both agreed on this and I kind of, we've wavered from that a little bit. Okay. So those are just some, you know, pointers about that. And I really appreciate you emailing me, Alex, at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Dr. Michelle Cohen here at your service to help you with suggestions, ideas, things like that, to help you with your relationships and what's going on. And also, you know, we're talking about some personal issues, how to kind of deal with your own personal stuff, because it's really important to be happy and know who you are first, and then you'll be good for other people. See, that's the way it works in the world, and I always say that at the end of my show. So it's really important to kind of get that. Alrighty. I have an email now from straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And by the way, we don't have therapy together. We're not in a therapeutic relationship. Anybody who has written me, and I'm giving suggestions to. This is from Celine. We have so many women who've been writing in about relationships. Come on, guys. Want to hear from you. Oh, there's one. Good. All right. All right. Let's hear from Celine first. She says, a lot of my friends say that I come off needy to men that I meet, and that's what's getting me in trouble and making men go away. Dear. They say that when I meet someone I like, I'm all over them. I don't see myself this way. I think I just keep it real. I don't play games. If I like somebody, I let them know. Can you give me any suggestions about how to come off like I'm not needy? Well, I think the only thing you have control over, Celine, the only thing you have control over are your thoughts and actions in the world, and that's the way it is. Thoughts, actions, feelings, right? So if you come off by being desperate and unrealistic or needy, that you got to pull those thoughts, feelings, behaviors back a little bit. Okay. You know, what happens a lot of times is we want to make a guy that we really like us right away. We want them to be maybe our boyfriend, especially if we've been dating a long time or we've been out there or we're tired of being alone. You know, so we kind of sometimes can act needy
Because, I mean, there is the old saying of, like, keep it real. And, Celine, I appreciate you keeping it real with guys. I really do. But sometimes if we really like somebody, we'll say and do whatever we think it will take them to make us our boyfriend. Right? So, women who act needy, all I can tell you, what comes to mind here, they're often buying into ideas that they've invented in their heads about everything a man does or doesn't do, meaning something. In other words, does a guy who's not calling you every moment of every day mean he's not into you or texting you? Right? If he's not texting you back right away, does that mean he doesn't like you? No, not necessarily. But once you convince yourself it does, you know, you rely on his texts or his calls to feel good and stable about the potentially budding romance you may have, right? And then if he doesn't call you, you start getting nervous. You're at work, you're whatever, with your friends, you're out Friday night, you've put it out there to this guy you just started dating or like. So you break down and you have a couple of drinks and you do a little drunk texting. Oh, gosh, the worst thing you can do. Or call him. Oh, no. No, no, no. No. That stuff just makes you come off as overly dependent upon somebody you just started seeing. So not you. You got to give him space. Okay? So being needy is never attractive. So if these are some of the things that you're doing, Celine, you got to think about it. Because if you're needy, the message that people are getting, and this also goes to guys. So I'm going to put this out here for everybody. Being needy is sort of like saying, please be my boyfriend. I'm desperate and lonely. I have no other options. And who wants to be with someone like that? It's kind of a major turnoff. You know, guys, here's a little secret. So just between you and me, Celine. Guys want women who have options and who are interesting and have their own lives. Guys who want codependent, desperate, needy women are not healthy. So you don't want them. Okay? So independence is a major winning quality in a woman. There's a fine line too, though. You got to kind of think about that too. So, okay? When you meet a guy you really like, play it kind of cool, but not cold. Pull back your enthusiasm about really getting to know him. Yeah, this is one of the things I hear a lot from people who are doing a lot of online dating, and they act either too cold because they don't want to come off needy, and they're chill, and they're just cold, and they're suspicious, and they come off like they're interviewing someone. So it's like an interview on the first date, or they're overly like, uh-huh, interested. And that's both of those are kind of a turnoff. So it's important, Celine, for you to let guys know that you kind of have a life. And that things take time. And sure, there might be times that you guys talk to each other every day. And it might be small talk. Keep the small talk going for a long time. Don't start asking probing questions, texts, about what do you want in a woman? You got to get to know somebody and what they're, who they are. It takes a while. It takes a really long time to get to know somebody. Just because they're hot. You know, that halo effect is so powerful. You know, it means because they're good looking or something, you project all these other wonderful qualities onto them, which is not necessarily true, you know. So it's a flow. You've got to, you know, and it's okay to reach out to guys, to text or call. Hey, just thinking about you, had a great time the other night. How you doing? Done. That's it. Don't lose it if he doesn't call or text back. Stay calm. Stay busy. Focus on your life. And when you feel compelled to call, text, or cling, do not act on it. Okay? And one of my questions to a lot of people who are dating and kind of pushing it and stuff like that, when they really like someone and they're disappointed, like Celine, because apparently they're coming off needy and they're not getting the responses they want from someone. Tell yourself, how's this? Tell yourself, do I really want someone who doesn't want me? Me, I'm a cool person. I know who I am. Does that person know how cool I am? Maybe not. But if I keep pushing it, I'm not going to get what I need. So I don't want to be with someone who doesn't want me. That's it. And if we need to tweak ourselves a little bit, you know, we need to help ourselves. Get a little, you know, therapy. Do it. Understand, you know, some of your bad behaviors if you beat yourself up and stuff like that and what you don't like about yourself. You know, talk about it to somebody. Get some help with it. Because as I always say, you got to be good for yourself. You got to like who you are, and then you'll be good for others. And I'm not talking about narcissism, like I talked about at the very beginning of the show. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you're on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. We're doing it. I'm taking your emails today and from the last several weeks. These are some of the most common issues that I have received. So what I'm doing is kind of checking out some really good ones. And they're all good, I'm telling you guys. I try to get to as many as I can to help you all out. And if I don't get to you, just, you know, email me back. Say, hey, wanted to hear about this. And I'll do that on the air. I don't do email therapy. I don't do that. I always check it out with people who've emailed me questions before I put their question on the air. And I do change the names for confidentiality as well. And we don't have a therapeutic relationship. I'm just giving you suggestions and ideas based on what I know, what I've done, and the research that I read as to what makes us have healthier lives, healthier relationships, healthier mental places that we go to. All right? So I'm going to dispel 7 myths about love and relationship. These are sort of the biggest myths that I've encountered in my experience as a psychologist throughout the years. Okay. And I do hear these all the time. So myth number one, I can only be happy and fulfilled if I'm in a relationship. Or the other one is, it's better to have a bad relationship than no relationship. Wrong. Because while there are health benefits that come with being in a healthy relationship, a lot of people can be just as happy and fulfilled without being part of a couple. So despite the stigma in some social circles, you know, that goes with being single, it's important not to enter a relationship just to fit in. I want to have a date for the wedding. A bunch of my friends, they're all couples. We're all going on the hiking thing. Well, there's going to be 11 of us, and I'm number 11. I don't care. Being alone and being lonely are not the same thing. Okay? So nothing is as unhealthy as being in a bad relationship. All right? Just because you don't want to be alone, or you got to ask somebody, you know, friend up. Get some friends of the same sex. Hey, friend zone. Those are always good. And make it very clear that you guys are in the friend zone if you don't want to date someone. Get some female friends if you feel awkward, guys, going out with other people who are coupled up. And girls, same thing. Get a guy friend. Yeah. If you're gay, get a guy friend. If you're lesbian, get a girlfriend. Don't feel, in other words, like you're that third wheel or the, as many people say, the 11th wheel in a group couple. Yeah. Okay. The other myth, number two. One of my favorites. If I don't feel an instant attraction to someone, it's not worth pursuing the relationship. I hear this a lot. You know, we have so many high expectations of what we're looking for physically in someone. Okay. This is such an important myth to dispel, especially if you have a history of making wrong choices. Instant sexual attraction and lasting love do not necessarily go hand in hand. Emotions change and deepen over time. Friends sometimes become lovers. If you give those relationships a chance to develop. So someone may not meet your needs and look as hot as you want them to, but maybe kind of cute. And you're looking for a relationship.
I would explore this deeper. I would take the time to get to know with someone. Get to know who they are. Take your time, especially if you're doing online dating. You know, this whole thing, swipe right. I didn't think it was that hot in his picture. Get some professional pictures taken of yourself for your online dating site, please. Look as good as you can. It's all about advertising. And yeah, I'm telling you, it is. But, I mean, they have to be realistic. Hopefully it looks like you. Don't put those pictures of you that are 10 years old or younger, rather, or 5 years younger even. Don't do that. Do current pictures. Keep it real. But get some nice flattery shots. But I'm saying to you, it's like, it's not all about looks. You know, I hear a lot of people in Los Angeles, Hollywood, entertainment capital of the world right here, say, whoa, it's so hard. The competition is so difficult because everybody's hot. Everybody's skinny. Everybody's, you know, everybody's buff. All the guys. They're all working out. They're all looking good. It's about finding someone who is special and meaningful and you have some attraction to. All right. Myth number three, women have different emotions than men. Women and men feel similar things. We really do, guys. We just express our feelings differently. Men and women experience the same core emotions. We all have sadness. We all have anger. We all have fear. We all have joy. We all have love. Okay? Same feelings. It's about expressing ourselves. Guys are more left brain. How to fix the problem. Okay? Women are more verbal. Expressing our feelings. We express feelings a lot more. But we all have the same feelings. We all have the same hurts. We all do. They're not different emotions. It's just the way we express ourselves. And if we want our partner to express themselves better, then we go to therapy together. We learn how to talk to each other. And I've had a lot of, you know, people on my show who are experts, psychotherapists, psychologists, psychiatrists even, who talk about learning how to, you know, kind of put down the walls a little bit, work on yourself so you feel okay about expressing your feelings. Yeah. Myth number four, true love is constant. Or physical attraction fades over time. That's the thing. Love is rarely static. But it doesn't mean that love or physical attraction is doomed to fade over time. You know, we get older. Yeah. But men and women have fewer sexual hormones, for sure. But, you know, emotion often influences passion more than hormones. And sexual passion can become stronger over time. I've seen it in a lot of people's relationships with a lot of couples I work with. So, you know, that's a big myth. Another myth is I'll be able to change the things I don't like about someone. Huge! Here you go. You can't change anyone. People only change if and when they want to change. Done. Next myth? I didn't feel close to my parents, so intimacy is always going to be uncomfortable for me. It's never too late to change any pattern of behavior. Over time and with enough effort, you can change the way you think, feel, and act. It's all about you, baby. Myth number seven. Disagreements always create a problem in a relationship. Look, conflict doesn't have to be negative or destructive. With the right resolution skills, conflict can be an opportunity for growth. It's the way you approach each other. It's the way you show love for each other. It's the way that you stand up and just say, you know, we're going to have a healthy disagreement or argument. And those are the seven myths about love and relationships that I hear so often. It's about that time, you guys. Wow, time flies when you're having a good time. I always say that. Thank you so much for emailing me on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So nice to have you here with me always on the couch on Fridays on LA Talk Radio. And next week, we're going to also be talking about how to get a little strength within yourself to be better for others. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. Dr. Michelle Cohen leaving you with, having a great weekend, and I thank you for tuning in. All of my shows are for free on iTunes Podcasts, On the Couch. Check them out for free and right here on LA Talk Radio in the archives on my webpage. Have a great day. Bye-bye now.